Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It's a very special episode for Score Lovers this week, as I'm joined by Jeff Barrow and Reg Weeks from Invada Records. With its impeccable roster of composers, Invada's back catalogue has featured more times on our podcast than we can count. Among the artists they've worked with who we've spoken to, Cliff Martinez, Mika Levy, Blank Mass, Warren Ellis, and of course, the wonderful Clint Mansell. They've also been incredibly supportive of what we do, so it really was a treat chatting with them both remotely. In addition to his celebrated band work, Jeff collaborates with another former guest on this show, Ben Salisbury, on film and TV scores. And he's teamed up with Ben and Bristol outfit The Insects for his most recent project, Alex Garland's mind-bending tech-noir series, Devs. It's an incredible piece of work, with this cue, Suffocation, a fine example of its complexity. Can we start by talking about Devs? I am 5 episodes in now. It's mind-blowing. It's so hard to describe to people as well, which is such a great thing. You know, it's like so rare you get the opportunity to go, have you watched this program Devs yet? And someone goes, what's it about? And you go, And the music is extraordinary in it because it plays so many parts and there's so many different kind of sounds in there as well. And you've obviously got history with working with Alex, you and Ben. But the thing that you do really well is kind of, you know, it's collaboration, I guess. And I know that Alex can push people hard and I know that he's, you know, he's a perfectionist when it comes to everything that he does sort of thing. But just in terms of the sound of the show, was it an easy thing to kind of, or how, what were the conversations that you had around how Devs would sound?
Well, I mean, we'd work with Alex on Ex Machina and Annihilation. This is me and Ben, and it was an eight episode TV show. And we'd also worked with Bob and Tim, who are a Bristol composing duo, much like myself and Ben, but they've been doing it a lot longer. And they're really cool. They wrote a lot of Protection for Massive Attack, and they've got, you know, an awful lot of history and of good stuff. And they are friends. So basically there was a couple of issues, personal issues with health and some timing issues and stuff like that we just said, look, let's all work together on it. And that's what ended up happening. I did a few episodes and then I went on tour and it was an awful lot of work. I mean, you know, Alex does like to, if you write a cue for series one, no doubt within a week it's gone from episode one and it's been reversed and it's on episode seven. and he's there going, well, it works kind of sometimes. And you go, yeah, well, it works sometimes because it wasn't meant for there. But ultimately, you trust and love his work.
Yeah.
He is someone who is incredibly special in this modern age of film and television. And we're just lucky to work with him. So, yeah, it's worked out really well. I mean, it's the first kind of like adult thing to go on Hulu, which is the Disney version of Netflix.
Yeah.
So people are still signing up for it in the States. And then, but luckily enough, because it was FX, the BBC had rights to it. And it's really, really odd because what's happened is that everybody, obviously, everything has gone on in the real world. Everybody's at home.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, like everyone's taking their time. They're not binging everything. So it's weird. I have people say, well, I'm going to watch Devs tonight and I'm not going to watch anymore. I'm going to watch it next week. And it's really odd. Mm-hmm. It's like going back into the past where you would watch Tenko or, or I don't know, something that was only on once a week. And it's really, really odd because I go on Twitter and everyone's talking about the episode that was on last night and not the whole series. But genuinely, I think, yeah, we knew that Invader were going to release it, and it comes out thanks to Reg and the good people at Disney, which we'd never dealt with before, and we were a bit worried about how, you know, I mean, you know, Reg, you got to say that it was a bit worrying, wasn't it? You know,
yeah, it was. It wasn't the you know, because Disney obviously have they've taken on Fox. I've worked with Fox on a few records previously, so there was a relationship there. But with the kind of the merger of Disney, it wasn't the, you know, it was the unknown really. It worked out great in the end, and I can't complain too much. It was just a bit of a long-winded process, but we're there now, and it's over the line, and it comes out literally in about 3 hours on digital platforms.
I can't wait to hear to listen to that as an album. It's just extraordinary.
What we're going to do is that we're going to recently we've been doing these playlists,
brilliant.
And it's lots of different people in actors and directors and musicians, and so what we're going to do is do because the score itself is the score, and but it doesn't have any of the soundtrack chosen parts on it. So we're going to do a special version of a playlist where basically all the part, all the music from everything is, you know what I mean? So yeah, so as a dev's kind of special, but as the score itself is a great album, you know. Ben is he's really on fire at the moment, and working with the Insects, it was just it was totally brilliant, because it, when I said they're from Bristol, they're like, they've been around the block and they're just so experienced and totally chilled. And we get on with them really well. So
the thing to do, kind of bring them into that world as well.
Well, it's weird, because what happens with a lot of TV shows, like the honest, this is like, you know, the behind the curtain bit that no one ever talks about, is that lots of people take on TV shows and then palm them off on other people, but never give them any credit, right? It's incredibly common. And that happens in film scores. It happens in, you know, I mean, literally you get people who just really do just say, I'll take on a TV show and I'm going to give it to other people, but I'm going to take all the credit. So for us, we worked on Hannah with the Insects. Deal is, if we work with other people, they get composer credits, because that's what they are.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And so when it came to devs, it was the same. It's exactly the same thing. It's like, no, we're not employing you to shadow us and pretend to be us. We're working with you because we wanna work with you. You know, and Alex was the same. So when you see the end of an episode, it says the Insects. You know what I mean? Like. And a lot of TV shows, it wouldn't be that. It would be the composer.
One composer.
And then the editor or whatever underneath, you know. But we won't work that way. It's just, you've got some amazing people that are kind of, are as good as the best people out there, you know, but they just don't seem to get the credit, you know what I mean?
Totally. Credit where it's credit due for us is that you guys have been so helpful and supportive of us at the podcast in terms of, you know, helping us with kind of accessing things and just being amazingly receptive to our numerous requests that we've kind of given as well. And it's just so healthy and lovely to see that it feels like soundtracks are getting a bit more attention. Do you feel that?
Jeff, do you want to answer that?
No, you do. You're the boss.
I think that the interesting thing is nowadays, and I weirdly enough, I spoke to Jeff about this yesterday, that I would say sort of 5 years ago, you were either an artist-led record company or you were a soundtrack record company. You didn't kind of amalgamate the two things. And in my opinion nowadays, I think we have obviously got your outright soundtrack fans who will only buy soundtracks from us, but you know, fans of Beak, which is, you know, Jeff's band, well, you know, a band that we've been working on for sort of 10 years with Jeff, it's a bit of a mixture of everyone now. So I think that even though soundtracks are getting a lot of exposure, I think that a lot of people that buy into bands, they're also buying into soundtracks. I think there's no real, neither are exclusive, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Composers like Clint Mansell, Jeff, Cliff Martinez, Trent Reznor, they've all come from a kind of, you know, a band history anyway.
Yeah.
And that's why, in my opinion, it's no longer about the composers, the traditional composers. It's more about the kind of the people that are a bit more open-minded, can turn their talents to a lot of different things, really. And I think that's why maybe Invader has kind of, it's stayed around, basically.
Well, it's got a reputation. I mean, it's obviously been a label that's been around and has been kind of feeding music fans with great music for so long. But what was that first step into supporting soundtrack and scores?
I'll let Reg continue this thing, but it was it's a funny story. I mean, so basically Invader started as a weird kind of beats label in Australia. So I set it up with a guy called DJ Catalyst, who's like the Australian DJ Shadow. And we took his music to all the majors, and they were still so into kind of like straight up rock, they just didn't know what it was. So I just said, well, let's just set our own label and put it out. So we did, and it did really, really well. And then I was living in Australia at the time. I came back to England, and there's a guy called Fat Paul, who's a legend in Bristol. He is actually legendary. He has put on every decent band, every weird gig, released every weird record. He's totally brilliant. And I went to Paul and I just said, look, let's do a label. And he was up for it. And we signed some bands, and we signed Billy, who was from Beak, who was in a band called Fuzz Against Junk. We did lots of really kind of heavy kind of stoner stuff. Gonga were one of our bands, and we did all that. And it was weird because, you know, the label was struggling really, really badly. And I knew Reg because he was a co-promoter for gigs with Fat Paul. And so they had a promoting company called Denim and Leather. And
I was Denim, he was Leather.
And,
at least it was double denim.
Yeah, double denim. Yeah. No, that would have been
that's
great.
So
they used to put Sun O on and you know, like all the really heavy bands and interesting electronic bands and, you know, really out there stuff. And so basically, Reg, when did you join Invader, Reg?
It was 2009, I think, because we just done a lot of the Portishead had done a lot of the ATP gigs, and I'd sort of been involved with Paul, not with some of the bands that were playing, and we'd become closer during that period, haven't we? And
yeah.
So I think it was around a time like Portishead curated ATP in Minehead around 2008, and then I joined, or 2007, and then I joined 2009.
Because basically, like, Invader was on its ass, really. We owed a load of money. We just, like, I was away on tour a lot. Paul kind of, like, the industry had changed a lot since Paul had started. So it was kind of difficult. And then Reg came in after running, like, a successful dance music business and was given the challenge of kind of trying to sort it out. And then one day we talked about the Drive soundtrack, didn't we?
I think you're in. I think Portishead were in Australia at the time. I think. I may be wrong. Or you're on holiday over there or something. And
yeah.
And I remember. I've gone to see the film. I was a big Cliff Martinez fan from the Solaris soundtrack. Obviously, I went to see Drive, blown away by the film, and we had another project kind of on the boil, you know, which I'll let Jeff talk about in a minute. But I'm on about the Drop project. So we had potentially a couple of kind of soundtracks on the horizon anyway, and I just rang up Jeff or texted him or something and said, oh, by the way, I've signed Drive. I literally heard the soundtrack and in the cinema, watched the film, blown away like most people. And straight away, you know, waited to the end, saw the credits, saw the music supervisor. Literally, soon as I got back to my house, Googled the company and sure enough, made the phone call the same night and we landed the score straight away. Wow. Well, the full soundtrack.
That's an amazing story.
And weirdly enough, the guy that I dealt with that night has become literally one of our closest kind of friends, stroke allies, stroke business acquaintances to this day.
Our partners, basically.
Yeah. So that's Brian McNellis from Lakeshore, who was the music supervisor on that very film.
Such a great story.
It's hilarious. What cracks me up about it is just the point that Red Shoulder Film liked it, went home, googled the bloke, and then called him.
I love it. I love it. It feels like we've done full circle now on that as well, because I was lucky enough to go to have Cliff on the show last year, and then we've had the terrifying but brilliant Nicholas Winding Refn on as well. And now,
yes, of course.
And now we have you guys to thank for us being able to buy it and listen to it and play it on our record players. God bless Invader.
But we sound like a load of chancers. Like,
yeah, but that's
because Reg was at the cinema, realised what this guy's name was, phoned him up. without any kind of knowledge, really, without any background or anything like that, just spoke to this guy and got the deal done. It's fair play.
It's the Bristol way.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Just blaggers.
Oh, that's brilliant. And did that kind of have an instant sort of... almost kind of, you know, what's going on here sort of thing? Did it get in terms of both sides of things of kind of...
Yeah,
of-
I think if Jeff doesn't mind me sort of taking over this bit, because I talk about this regularly with a lot of people, that Beak were kind of, I think Beak were recording their second album at this point, and there was another record that you may or may not know called Drock, which was based on 2000 AD comics, Judge Dredd, that Jeff and Ben had composed. There was like this kind of trilogy of releases that all came out within a kind of 3 month period of each other, and honestly, that was the catalyst for the label to kind of accelerate very quickly from that point onwards. And you know, when you've got like Drive, you've got Drock, and then we have Beak 2, which I think, if Jeff won't mind me kind of saying this, I think Beak 2 just elevated Beak so much more than the first record. Like I say, we had three great records that all crossed over, and I mean Jeff can take over from there, but the three records.
But also we had a good amount of artists then, and we had you started releasing the college records.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Who was involved on the Drive soundtrack? Yeah. I can't remember what was the score we did after that.
I think I was at that point because I was in touch with Cliff Martinez and people like that. I think we did the Drop record, we did the Drive record, and then we did a retrospective record, which we rarely do at Invader. We're very much try to release contemporary scores rather than like retrospective scores. So we did the Solaris, which was my favourite, still is my favourite score of all time.
Big one for us as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, Solaris, and so we had Solaris and we had Drive, and the offers just came in from there, really. And we had some really, really great offers, and it just catapulted from there. It really did.
I think basically our business is really, our model is very, very simple. And what was happening was that composers didn't, maybe they didn't really feel like they had a place that was a kind of like a home for like-minded composers, and for some reason we kind of fell into that thing. We talk a lot of music with people because we're not just we're a label of artists as well. So someone like Ben Frost who does Dark, it's just we can talk all day about recording sessions or whatever, or whoever it is. Luckily we've done a couple McAlevey's last thing as well, and the big one as well is the guys from Survive, who did
Stranger Things.
My brain has grown west, but Colin Michael who did Stranger Things, that was a massive thing for us as well. Thank you. but they kind of know us as a music label.
Yeah, well, you've got that reputation, haven't you? It's that thing. I think that's what you do so brilliantly, and it was what makes you so kind of quite a unique entity, in that you've got those relationships with directly with the composers who see, you know, what you're about, be that, you know, your Cliff Martinez's or your Clint Mansell's or whatever, but then also with the directors, you know, and you have people like Ben Wheatley, who not only, you know, in terms of the soundtracks being released, but also then working with you on specific, you know, on a score.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that is that thing. It's just, but they're kind of music and film people. That ultimately, it's just they're fans of music and they're fans of film. Everybody that we deal with pretty much is that, you know. And so we talk about other films and we talk about other music and score writers, and people are really supportive, you know, like, you know, Clint is a massive supporter, you know, thankfully a massive supporter of us. But then he'll, you know, he's really into what another composer will do and will tweet about it. And yeah. I mean, we don't have kind of, you know, like a digital marketing team, because I don't know, we're lucky that people like what we do and we'll talk about it.
I've got to elaborate on Clint. I think Clint Mansell, he came on board not only as an artist but as a true supporter of the label.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, absolutely.
Clint actually helped me get Solaris over the line. I mean, that was 20th Century Fox. I was kind of drawing blanks for many months chasing that score, and you know, Clint said, "Look, I know a music supervisor. I can't remember. I know somebody in the legal side of it." And you know, he really helped me. He wrote a letter saying, you know, these are acquaintances of mine, and would you mind helping me out? As because he just composed Stoker, which we didn't get to release, but I was a big fan of the score.
Yeah.
Thing with Clint, I've got to say, he was a real kind of kingpin in the evolution of Invader, definitely.
Yeah, he's kind of, he was
wearing drop t-shirts in every photo shoot around that time as well. Honestly, he could, if you look back to about 2012, 2013, the only thing I think he wore was an Invader or a drop shirt. I don't think he wore anything else.
Yeah.
maybe a Wolverhampton, I mean, Wanderers.
I mean, the thing is that ultimately what we do is that we really try and support the composers. So we want them to feel that we've got their back. It's non-corporate, you know. So we had a thing recently where somebody had done a score for a Netflix thing, and Netflix kind of, they've been absolutely brilliant with us, but they changed their kind of their view on how on whether they wanted to release scores anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to, you know, the composer was pulling his hair out massively, like going, "I'm just going to release it on SoundCloud tomorrow. I don't care if people are not going to hear it." So we try our absolute utmost to kind of get behind people and then try and get like a decent lawyer or people we know in the business. I mean, Reg will say this, it literally comes down to someone having a dinner with somebody month's time and then saying, "Hey, do you know that these guys want to do this?" And they go, "Oh, I didn't know that." do you reckon they could do it? And it's, I mean, it's...
Yeah, whereas there's like almost 40 emails in their inbox asking for the same thing, but it takes that one sort of person at dinner to go, can we do this?
Yeah, it's because most film companies generally don't give a monkeys about the soundtrack.
Yeah. But it's so true, because you kind of, do you know, we even find it as well when we were doing interviews for things. It's like, so that, you know, you get the film companies coming at you and you go, do you want so-and-so for an interview for the podcast? And it's like, oh, that'd be amazing, thanks so much. And then we're editing it and we go, could you send over the soundtrack? And they went, oh, I don't think we can get a hold of it. I'm like, well,
I know.
That's called soundtracking. So, you know, it's like, oh my God, how many times do I have to have this conversation with you sort of thing? But I think there's a bit of catch up with people as well. And I think that there's been, you know, with all these kind of live shows, and I went to see Clint do his The Moon score live at the Barbie.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Extraordinary, you know, and I think that there's that side of it as well that's becoming more and more prevalent. And I think that it's, you know, another thing that's putting a spotlight on and how, you know, we can access these things. I mean, I remember kind of growing up and having a couple of soundtracks I would listen to over and over and over again, sort of thing,
of course,
as records and stuff. And it seemed to kind of have a period of time where it wasn't a thing, really. You know, you didn't really kind of buy that many, or they didn't seem to really be that available. And then I don't know what it was, whether, I mean, I think Tarantino definitely had a big thing in terms of
the way
that he used music in his films. It was kind of like, oh yeah, you know. And it's kind of that thing, apart from, like, obviously your big sort of, you know, things like, you know, John Williams stuff and all that kind of thing. And then it's gone, my God, there's so much stuff out there. And I love kind of when people talk about things and I go, I really don't know much about that score, I've got to go and dig it out, sort of thing. And it's, I'm just glad that people are talking about it more.
I mean, also, just, I think with labels, electronic labels, where what started to happen is that more experimental jazz and electronic labels over the years have kind of grown. I mean, I would say, like, in a popular music way, that someone like Radiohead has kind of, you know, the way that they've developed over the years. So people are prepared to listen more to kind of abstract electronic music, mm-hmm. and or possibly abstract classical music. Do you know what I mean? Or jazz, yes. Or whatever. And that's always been a thing, but I think it's always been very small, where what's happened is that I think that, you know, you get someone like the Aphex Twin is obviously a huge artist, and there's not going to be any 3-minute pop songs on there. Do you know what I mean? As such, yeah. And his piano works and everything else. So if you get someone who's a fan of his, then someone like the work of Cliff Mansell or Carl and what's the name for Michael. Stranger Things, yeah. Michael, you know, it all kind of makes sense. What was the film with the actor that what's his name, Keaton, with the jazz score?
Oh yeah, Birdman.
Yeah, I mean that's a classic example of an amazing score.
Yeah,
the people into jazz and electronic music and would dig. So I think a lot of music has crossed over. So a prime example for us is Ben Frost.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Frost is known as a you know, hard kind of experimental electronic, you know, music composer, and then he does Dark. So if you're a Ben Frost fan, then you buy Dark. So it's just interesting records. It's just also people just kind of having their fill of, you know, the 3-minute pop tune slightly, you know. And also modern classical, you know, Mika Levy, what she did. I mean, Mika Levy's score for Under the Skin changed my life. Absolutely. I first heard it when Reg was playing in the studio, and I just thought, I have no idea what this is.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was just maybe an electronic record, or I don't know whether someone's going to start singing or
yeah,
or what. I had no idea, but I'd never heard anything like it in my life. And it's just, and that changed music for me. That was like, I changed everything for me. It was like, that's another world. Because it doesn't matter whether that's a pop tune or whether it's a modern classical, whether it's a soundtrack, whether it's an electronic record, it's just the most amazing music ever.
Soundtrack she did for Monos as well, and was
just, oh, amazing, yeah.
Great. Oh my god. And I was really scared about interviewing her. I don't know why. Maybe just because I'm such a big fan sort of thing. She was so sweet and so kind of like unassuming and just sort of like...
Well, she's a pure artist, isn't she? I mean, she's a pure artist. She's the thing that everybody wishes, you know, they could be. You know, in a sense of like, don't really care. If you don't really like something, you just don't do it.
That's kind of like... That's the position that everybody kind of wants to be in, but not everybody has the balls to see through sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, when we found out we had Monos, I mean, we did a weird release, didn't we, of Under the Skin. We not a release, yeah. But we helped kind of we did a special edition or something like that, didn't we?
Well, what happened? Truthfully, it was another drive sort of scenario. I remember going to see Under the Skin. I think it was at the Watershed. I don't know if you know that place. It's like an art cinema.
It's brilliant. Yeah, yeah, brilliant.
And
my new hood. So when I get let out, I'm coming to visit.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, go to Watershed. It's a brilliant place.
It's like the Curzon. You know, it's exactly like the Curzon. Yeah. Anyway, I saw that. Again, waited to the end, the old trick, and I found out it was I can't remember if it was an A24 film or it was definitely A24 in America. I don't know if it was, I think it was Studio Canal, that was it. It was Studio Canal with a distributor, rang them up straight away. They said there's nothing they could do, but they put me in touch with Milan Records in America, and then I had a kind of conversation with the guys over there with JC, and he said, look, you know, if you want to get some for Europe, no worries. So we bought a load of stock, and then Studio Canal, it was their idea. They said, hey, look, we've got these kind of silk screen posters, you know, you can have some to give them away with the album. And that's pretty much what we did. We put them on sale on our web store. I mean, I think we sold like 450 copies, and it wasn't even our record, you know.
Yeah, so no.
I think we sold more from our web store than they sold in the whole of the UK collectively from record shops. I don't know about now, obviously, because, you know, it's probably gone on to sell, you know, thousands of copies. But yeah, there was a few records like that that we did.
Yeah, I think the thing is as well is that what we like to do is that we like to, with a small film, like something like Bait.
What a film.
You know, yeah, I mean, we were really, you know, very lucky with that as well. But we like to work with the film company, the distributor, because so many people that go, like, I mean, if you go see Bait or if you go see a lot of the smaller films that we work with, then you're obviously, you're going to be into the soundtrack as well. You're just those kind of people, right? So the thing is that we work really closely with the marketing of you know, because we feel that we can get some press, you know, in the music world that will help promote the film, you know, further themselves. So people might go and see the film. So I think it's a that's how it should always work. It's like if Beyonce does Men in Black and she's all over Pitchfork, then, you know, Mark's score for you know, should be on the quietest, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how it should, we should support each other.
All right, boy.
All right, Dad.
What's on?
Nothing.
You want to come out with me tomorrow? Could do without.
Nah, you're right.
Need the money, don't you?
Not that much, you done.
You got something to say, Martin?
Just said it, brother.
What about you?
I'm fishing.
Offer's always open. You come back whenever you want.
No thanks.
It's really weird how still kind of a lot of distributors and film companies don't see that as a kind of bonus. But it's so strange because Drive was, that was a big film, but it would have massively been helped by the score.
So how do you, what's the process then of like, of how you decide what films, what soundtracks you're going to get behind and support, you know, like just looking at the list, like even like over the past couple of years, I mean, it's been so many people that we've had on the podcast as well, you know, whether it be like Out of Blue, you know, with kind of with Clint and Hotel Artemis as well, War Machine, Never Really Here, Beale Street Could Talk as well, and just so and Bait and all that stuff that you're talking about as well. So what's, how do you decide what your, what's going to be, you know, on Invader?
Well, it's a bit of everything, really. I mean, all the ones you've just mentioned, not only are they great scores, but they're all great films. You know, if you look at something like You Were Never Really Here, that I've got to give Jeff total credit for that. I think that was just a personal friendship with Johnny, wasn't it, Jeff, that one?
Well, it's not even a friendship. It's just an email, isn't it?
You were direct, weren't you?
I mean, you know, obviously everybody loves Johnny Greenwood. He's amazing, you know. But, you know, we'd met a couple of times and, you know, I said any kind of, well, I, you know, if we're a huge fan of the film and the score, if you would want to do an Invader, and he knew Invader really well, and he just went, oh, I'd absolutely love to do it. It's because ultimately we want to support. If I don't know, it's weird being a composer or whatever. Composer is such a wrong word, but being a film, working in film and stuff like that, you just know how people can send, like companies can send you down the wrong path. Mm-hmm. But we try and be incredibly respectful for the artists and the composers that we work with. You know what I mean? It's just like and we massively respect what they do. So. Ultimately, I think that's what they like about it. It's a very simple, old-fashioned way of working, really. You know.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit like in a weird kind of a way, probably a terrible kind of comparison, but it's a bit like I saw the Blue Note documentary. I don't know if you saw that, the film, the Blue Note film.
Yeah.
And you know, they were saying about the guys. Is it the German guys that kind of they just became total friends and it with all the musicians.
Yeah.
And
the word of mouth thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. But things just perpetuated. So you had it was weird because I watched that. I watched that with my dad actually, who's a real old sort of jazz head. You know, and really we were just very very kind of blown away by the fact that how my dad commented, you know. This is almost how you run things as well. You know, he kind of knew my business model without me even thinking about that. That, you know, we have just become good friends with a lot of the composers we work with, but we try and accommodate, you know, not pander.
It's about respect.
It's
about respect. Yeah. And honesty, really. I mean, it's like, We're not become multi-millionaires through it, but if you've got you know what it's like, if you've got a cool label, you're all right, aren't you?
it's funny because you know in the last 2 years we've had it is like it sounds like I'm trumpet blowing now, but if you told me at the start of 2-3 years ago that we'd be working with with PJ Harvey, mm-hmm. with Mika Levi, with Trent Reznor and Atticus, you know, people like that, Ben Frost, it's just, it's madness, really, considering where we were when, you know, say like 8-9 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just done the Drive score and, Drive soundtrack, sorry. And I just, you know, Nick Cave, Warren Ellis. I mean, that blows my mind.
Oh my God, I know. Warren, the nicest man in the world.
Exactly. Oh. I speak to him every day, and it's just brilliant, you know. And I pinch myself every day.
Just surrounding yourself with nice people, isn't it? And kind of wanting the best for everybody, being supportive, and being kind of championing the stuff that you believe in, really.
The thing is, if they go, like, ultimately, if Warren S goes, yeah, you can trust those guys; they're good dudes. There you go. Sorted.
Yeah.
It's just that's all you want, really.
Yeah.
Because I know that if I was signed to a label, that's what I would want.
Thank you.
And it's kind of, it is interesting because, like, soundtracks have grown quite a lot, especially with vinyl, because we try and source out the best place to, you know, to, there's a, is it GZ?
No. We, Pat Palace.
No.
Yeah, no. Where's that? It's Palace. Where's that place in Germany? Yeah,
where, is that the place that it just? That's the place where it just sounds ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, Palace. Yeah, there is. Yeah, it's, Palace. It's quite hard to get an account there, but it's good. It's great once you.
But the thing is, for some reason, I don't know why I've always GZ. They're obviously very good as well, along with all the record suppliers. But
I'm saying nothing.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's like I've listened to a couple of scores, and not being funny, scores go really, really quiet and really, really loud on vinyl. So you have to cut them really, really well, or you have to press them really well.
Yeah.
And yeah, Palace, it's a little bit frightening because it sounds like a CD. But it sounds better than a CD because it's on vinyl.
Yeah.
But you just go, there's no surface noise. And you just go, this cannot be right. I've listened to scores that me and Ben have done on them and just gone, how have they done that? You know,
I love that someone's making you say that. That's brilliant.
No, but Czechoslovakian, are they all German?
it's like you say, just go that extra mile. You know what I mean? Spend a few quid extra per unit.
Who's on the wish list? Have you got like people that you'd really like to work with?
To be honest with you, yeah. I mean, there's a few I'd love. I mean, Hilda obviously would be amazing to work with.
She's
really good female composers. Kind of Carly, who works with Clint's kind of brilliant. Emily Levenes as well. She did a little film last year called Only You, which I thought the score was beautiful for as well. She's, I'm really excited by her as well.
I'll go and check that out, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. There's Suvi, who unfortunately at the moment works for me and Ben, is a Finnish composer, and she is mentally good. I just know that any time now she's going to do something and just like, see you later, because then we'll be done for then. You know,
see you later, but can you release my record on your label, please?
Yeah, no, of course we will. Honestly, she's the most talented person I've come across. It's frightening, you know what I mean? It's just the frightening youth, you know what I mean? Just how good people are. and it's obviously is like with Hilga, it's, and rightly so, Christ's sake, we've been in the dark ages, haven't we? You know what I mean? When it comes down to female composers, you know.
Yeah.
Really have. Or anybody outside the normal scarf-wearing kind of, twat.
Well, I think we could definitely kind of change that as well. And kind of, there's an opening of doors, I think, for a lot of people after, the success of what she did, or even kind of just the attention that what she did with that Under the Skin score did. It was kind of like,
Mickey Levy. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the gateway drug. You know what I mean? That's the one.
I agree. That's the game changer pretty much for everyone. Everyone I know just says, yeah, that's the one. That's the one. I think Drive was, as a kind of soundtrack, a complete soundtrack. I don't just mean the score was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But I think Under the Skin, but I've got to say, Jeff's on the phone as well, but when we were doing things like Ex Machina.
Oh, I love that.
I mean, that for me as well, I mean, that was a huge one for Invader, absolutely huge one. I mean, we had so many pre-orders for that. That was when I realised there's something going on here, And that was after Drive, So I just long may it continue, but yeah. I just think Ex Machina was another one around that sort of time period. A lot of very good scores that came out around that time. There was a Mike Patton score as well, Place Beyond the Pine. I don't know if you...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was the one where all the Ryan Gosling fans walked out halfway through because he was killed.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Like, people leaving the cinema.
What's next for you, Jeff, in terms of score stuff and soundtrack stuff?
Well, Ben and I have just started working on a Paul Schrader film.
Oh, wow.
Obviously he's a renowned director, but as a screenwriter who wrote Raging Bull and Taxi Driver. So he's doing a film with Oscar Isaac in it. And we've seen kind of 40 minutes of it, and it is it's a utterly terrifyingly brilliant film.
Well, what was his last one? First Reformed. That was brilliant.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
so good.
Yeah. And we've spoken to him, and he's 73 now. He is this absolute whirlwind of energy that kind of puts us all to shame. And he's wicked. He's in isolation up at in New York at the moment, right up in the sticks. And he's kind of like he's editing the film remotely with an editor in New York. And so yeah, so it's a bit weird. Ben has got a little studio that he's worked on. He's written a kind of some piano pieces. And I did this thing today. I managed to become the worst IT man in the world. And get my computer working with this program that really creates weird sounds. So I've just sent that to Ben. So I think that's the next thing. I mean, you know, we've got a couple of things. We've got a couple of things coming up. But you know, it's a very very strange time. Yeah. I mean, you know, we like Invader Records and Invader Studio. We do this thing where people can work certain hours, and then other people leave and they have to wipe everything down and then someone else comes in. You know what I mean? So it's a real thing. And we're just about kind of getting along, aren't we, Reg? You know,
someone on social media today, when you were announcing that the dev soundtrack was coming out digitally, and someone then said to you, when's it coming out on vinyl? And you were like, bloody hell, give me a break.
That was the straw that broke the camel's back. So yeah, that I might have to delete that or apologise to him later on, or send him a free download of it or something. But because I think about 20 people liked my comment as well, which I felt pretty bad for afterwards. But
I think that was just enough. Back off.
Well, it only took about, you know, 2 months to negotiate the license of that project. So yeah, so.
See, that's all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes that we don't know about. Yeah. I mean, I got a slight insight into it. I think, Jeff, last time when we spoke with you and Ben and Alex about Annihilation and stuff, and about, you know, persuading Netflix to, well, that was a complicated project anyway, but that kind of thing of kind of trying, having to convince people that the soundtrack was worthy to be released and stuff. And I know that spoken to Clint about that as well, about various projects and stuff. I was like, God, come on, people. It's like, these are wonderful pieces that are, you know, it's going to benefit everybody, really. It's like there's a want for it.
It's so strange. That, yeah. I mean, this is what I was saying, is that, like, Clint's got a big fan base musically, you mm-hmm. know. It's like, so you get these people that, and so what it does, it adds to promote your show or your film. And it's kind of so weird that it's hard to get it from them. It's really easy to sign off. It's just it's a contract and a piece of some artwork, you know. But it's not easy for Reg, you know what I mean?
He just gets on Google and sends an email. Surely that's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've got with Devs is coming out digitally. Calm with Horses is another one that's on with you guys, which is a brilliant film that Ben Blankmass has done as well. What other new releases have we got coming the way with you guys?
We've got Dark Season 3, which is Ben Frost. I've just been in talks. I had a long chat yesterday, actually, with Ben's manager, who's a really good mate of mine up at ATC. And we've got potentially something else from Ben. We're just, again, it's navigating the, navigating stuff with that. We've got a couple of... It sounds very conceited me saying this, but we've got a couple of things that are kind of subject to contract mm-hmm. at the moment.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I don't want to kind of...
I get it.
Well,
don't worry.
Not only curse them, but kind of land myself in a whole heap of trouble. And yeah, Devs will, you know, as the poor man asked earlier on Twitter, it will come out on vinyl and CD. It will be an epic vinyl package. So we tried to get Devs down to a double LP, but it just wouldn't happen because eight episodes worth of music is already been very, very, very trimmed down anyway. So, yeah, so we've got that will come out relatively soon as a triple LP and a CD as well.
Christmas.
But yeah, we've got a lot of stuff. There is some two or three really, really big things. When I say big, you know, really things that everyone in this on this kind of chat will be interested in.
Yeah.
But you know, at the moment I can't really sort of say we've got an Atticus Ross TV show that he's just done as well.
So busy, it's brilliant.
Yeah, we've got enough stuff literally between now and the end of the year. I mean, we're looking at next year now with what we've got. We've got Jeff just brought something to the table as well from one of his contacts again. You brought, you know, I can't say who it is because we'll
oh that'll be
a really interesting one, and I don't know what else I can say about that, Jeff.
It's just I think it's that weird thing. It's just like I've got a big mouth and I'm on Twitter and you know, I bump into a few people on the circuit, and so, you know, and Invader's got a good name, so we're very lucky that people, if we approach people or people come to us, that, you know, I mean, we've had a few people that have kind of come to us and really kind of been wrong for us, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and give us the big one, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, and instantly it's just like, no, you're looking at the wrong. You're looking at the wrong thing.
Because
obviously it's just like, we're not going to pay 200,000 quid for a soundtrack record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, you're talking about the night, you know, Phil Collins, you know, time there. You know what I mean?
You're going to re-release Buster.
That'd be wicked.
Hey, we got you found out what it is. We got the 40th anniversary of Buster.
40th anniversary of Buster, yeah.
Yeah.
But we keep on going. I mean, like Reg said, I mean, the idea that like 5 years ago we were working with Warren Ellis and Nick Cave and Polly Harvey and people like Ben Frost and Trent Reznor, and you just think, you know, it's all right, isn't it? And we've got a ton of stuff coming up as well, and we got really good, you know, new artists that are kind of coming through, like Billy Nomates, who's utterly brilliant.
No is the greatest resistance. No to your nothing existence. No is a walk, no small talk. No, I don't think it looks better. Yes, we are stronger together. But no is a power. Anytime, any place.
Like going out of her mind in isolation at the moment, but she's been told she's got to make a video for her next single. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
like, Beaker desperate. You know, we were supposed to have been recording this week for her next record. You know, I mean, nobody's going to complain, are we? So ultimately, you know, there are people working their asses off and putting themselves at risk. So we're very, very lucky to be where we are. You know.
Well, I'm glad to hear that we've got a kind of constant stream of stuff coming between now and Christmas to keep us sane through this weird situation that we find ourselves in. And as I said at the start, thank you so much for just being a massive support for us, you know, in terms of...
I know, same for you and us, you know, it's been good, you know what I mean?
For Ben, you know, he's, I know, been so helpful in providing us with bits and bobs and stuff along the way when we've going, shit, we can't get hold of it. So, yeah, massive thanks. And thanks so much for your time tonight as well. And, yeah, I can't wait to catch up in the flesh and have a beer. Jeez.
Yeah, no, that'd be really good.
Let's
do it. Let's do it. Yeah.
You're only 40 minutes down the road. It's like, oh God, so close.
Yes. Let's do it at the Watershed in Bristol.
Let's do it.
And watch a film.
Yes.
In mass. You know, that would be really good. And also, I can't remember what I was going to say then. It completely went. But there you go.
All right, gents. Take care. Okay. Stay safe. No worries. Thank you so much. Okay.
Same to you. Oh, no, I know what it was.
Yeah.
I remembered. So hopefully in about a week's time, a week and a half's time, there's a load of stuff that we didn't use in devs as well.
Ooh.
That is really, really mental. That I'm going to put up for a week on a SoundCloud link.
Ooh.
Bits and bobs, basically. But stuff that, you know, it didn't work, obviously. But it was so much fun recording. So it's just, we've got to do it.
That's exciting. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
I might go and watch another episode now before I pass out, because it's like, I need to get to the end of it and find out what happened.
yeah,
right, listen, absolutely. Take care. Thank all you right. so much. See you later, guys.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye. From the score to devs, that's All Possible Worlds, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Jeff Barrow and Reg Weeks from Invader Records. My huge thanks to the guys for taking the time to talk to me. Head to invader.co.uk to check out their back catalogue and do buy some of that choice vinyl whilst you're there. You must immediately download and listen to the devs score in its entirety. It is extraordinary. Head to edithbowman.com to catch up with all of our previous episodes, including Mika, Warren Ellis and Clint Mansell. And do please subscribe whilst you're there. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK, and also our YouTube channel, where I'm putting together a weekly show with guests from the world of film, music and television. In this week's episode, you can hear Joe Gilgan talk about the latest series of his brilliant, hilarious Sky comedy, Brassic. Next up on Soundtracking, we have the wonderful Nitin Soni. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then. In the meantime, stay safe.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. but don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.